Hey guys.
Hey.
How are you?
Doing
good. How are you?
Very good. Good to see you. Thanks for being patient. Sorry, I was running a little late on another call I had.
No worries.
Just getting organized here. Give me one second. All right. I am looking for a deck that I need to present today. Give me just one second.
Sure, I'll give you three or four, no problem.
Three or four seconds. Thank you. I will probably need up to three or four seconds. All right, I have a presentation that I don't like very much. I'm looking for the
difference.
Hey, Steve, how are you? Good to see you.
How you guys doing?
I'm okay. All right. Except that I'm having a hard time finding the presentation that I most wanted to find. And I thought I had it, and I didn't. Okay, maybe I have. Yes, I do. Okay. This is getting on there too. All right. So today we are talking about, I think we finished last week. Those of you who were with us, we finished how to have hard conversations. This week, we're going to be talking about how to have performance conversations. So when it comes to you got somebody you want them to perform better and they're not, one of the things that I always try to make sure people realize is that hard conversations, when you are in power, whenever you're in power, perceived or real power, your whisper is always a shout. And the megaphone, the size of the megaphone you have, is relative to the size of the team you run and whatever access to other power you might have. So let me give you a couple of examples. If the team you run is 50 people, your megaphone is going to be heard louder than if you have five people. If you have five people, but you have the direct ear of the CEO and you're best friends with the CEO, your megaphone is going to be louder than somebody who runs a team with five people and is seven removed from the CEO. Does that make sense? So it's all about your relative relationship to power that amplifies the scale and size of your megaphone and your whisper gets louder. So if you've got a small team, and there's no one above you, you have a smaller megaphone, but you still have a megaphone. And the reason is because just like a police officer who is the only one authorized to kill with lethal force, legally allowed to shoot and kill people, you are legally allowed to remove their livelihood. And so that means, even though it's unspoken, you have a tremendous amount of power in how you're going to be experienced and received. So I just wanted to flag that for you so that as we have these conversations about how to manage down and lead people through performance, you're just thinking through, again, that emotional system. What I'm talking about is that 80% that's below the water, that emotional system, what's going on, that's all unspoken and nobody talks about. So let me share my screen. And historically, I was having a little bit of a hard time with Keynote, but I think I figured it out. So what happens is, sometimes when I'm, I see what happened here. Sometimes when I'm advancing slides, people don't see it. And I'm going to try to figure that out here. Sorry. You know, this is amateur hour with me today. I don't even know why I'm here. You know, this is terrible. Okay. All right. I can't see the play button. You guys are all in the way. There it is. All right. So when we're talking about managing down, this is all, by the way, module three. You can go deeper in module three. There's a little workbook and a guidebook. You're welcome to take notes. This will be recorded. It'll be in the coaching calls, but I go deeper and I have some other resources in the module three. So if you're feeling like this is where you're at and this is really useful and you want to focus on it, let's do that. That's where you're going to find it. So it's called the Arise model. This is where there are always and only five reasons people don't perform. And what I try to help you do is figure out what's the right intervention for the right reason, because when you use the wrong intervention for the wrong reason, you're going to get the opposite results. And that's what we're going to try to avoid. And so the first reason and the five reasons, I always start with managers when they come to me, they're like, I'm not getting the performance I want, is they are saying to me, I ask them, have you made the person awake or aware of what it is you most want? And very often I can find the source of the problem there. So literally, I just got off of a coaching call with a manager. He's a CIO of a company. He has a direct report who's a director of managing director of one part of their business. And that managing director takes tons of time from his team. He doesn't know how to run a 30-minute meeting. He will tell you, if you ask him what time it is, he'll tell you the history of watchmaking. He'll build you a watch, and then he'll eventually tell you the time. And people are being driven crazy. They're burning up hours. Legal bills are mounting because this guy doesn't know how to have an efficient conversation with anybody. And so I said to the manager, here's how you're going to performance manage him. And at the end of me telling him all the things he needs to do, he said, you know what, Shane? I don't know that I've really done a great job of letting him know how serious this problem is. And I said, great, then let's start there. And so we went back and we redid what we were going to do, because he realized he had failed to effectively tell this guy what was happening, how bad it was, and how serious it is, and how he needs to help him in a new way. So very often, a hard conversation with someone you're managing who is not performing well will begin with this phrase as a manager. Hey, I need to start by admitting I haven't done a very good job as a manager. I have failed to adequately describe what I most need from you. And that's on me. And that's something I want to try to repair today. So just know, use that, memorize that little phrase I just said there. That's a great way to intro any conversation about performance management, because chances are some part of it you haven't done, and I'll show you how. So the first is, have I even communicated my expectations? That's the first question you have to ask yourself. The second question, have I clearly defined the target we are aiming for? So that's the second question. And what I mean by that is, so my expectations are, I need you to talk less. Okay, great. Well, have I clearly defined exactly what that means? Yeah, and no, I haven't. Like, for example, instead of just talk less, I need you to understand that meetings need to be, when it's a 30-minute meeting, I need you to be talking less than 15 minutes of that 30 minutes. And I need you to close that meeting at the end of 30 minutes. That needs to be a consistent, repeated pattern behavior over the next month for me to know that you're making meaningful progress. Because the big complaint that I keep getting is that the meetings that are supposed to be 30 minutes last an hour and a half. And most of that time, you're doing the talking. That shouldn't be that way, right? So you can hear the difference between, I need you to manage economy and thought and word, and here's a specific example that I need that to be different in. Now, this can be expressed very differently depending on what issue you're doing, but I'm just trying to get through like these layers of depth and specificity. And you may not need to answer all these questions. So here's the next one. Have I told them how to get there? So for example, this manager may not know how to get there, in which case he needs to say, I don't know how to help you, but I know you need to find a way to make this happen. Or maybe you want somebody to design a strategy and their strategy is really weak. And you know exactly what elements need to be in a strategy. So you need to say to them, what I need from you are three sections. I need background, I need objectives, I need three different strategies, and I need implications. And that's the format I want to see it in. And it needs to be really thought through in at least five pages, right? Like, now you're telling them how. Like, so you need to say, do I know how? And if I don't know how, then I need to tell them, I don't know how. That's your job. I expect you to figure out how, or I've got a coach, or I've got this resource, but I don't know how, and you can figure out how. Or if you do know how, you need to tell them exactly how. Okay, so that's step three. Next, have I told them the sequence of steps? So you don't necessarily have to do this every time, right? But maybe there is a sequence that really matters and you haven't told them and they don't know. They can't read your mind. So great example. I need you to develop a strategy. The first step in developing a good strategy is for you to go out and with your team, develop some research about what the market trends are. And then I want you to think through what are our strengths and weaknesses as a team relative to those external factors. And then the third thing I want you to do is meet with me and give me your hypothesis. And then the fourth thing I want you to do is to do a write-up based on all those conversations you've had. So now I've given them exactly what winning looks like. I've told them exactly how to do it. And I've given them a step-by-step guide on how what needs to happen in what order. So you may or may not have to do this every time, right? There are lots of different ways to manage, but I'm giving you the various categories that I want you to have. So the document, the kind of document that you have needs to be something you can reference and go, why am I not getting the performance? And you can look through this and go, did I do that? I don't really need to do that. Did I do this? No, I didn't. And I definitely need to do that. This is going to help you be more effective. Okay. Next, have I prioritized the steps for them? So let me tell you what that means. Priority and sequence are two different things. Sequence is this needs to happen before that. Priority is when you do your research externally on the market, I want you to put 70% of your effort into that. And I want you to put about 20% of your effort into a hypothesis because you and I are going to workshop that anyway. So I don't need you to come up with like some fully baked, amazing plan because I'm going to interact with you on it. So just put a little bit of thought around some hypothesis, but I want really good data. Right. So now what I've done is I've said there's a sequence of steps, but there's also different weighting, different effort that needs to go into different steps. So far, these are the steps: sequence, priority. Next, this is a really big one that I notice a lot of people miss. Have I verified we have a shared understanding? So let's say I went through all of these different steps and I'm like, here's what you need to do. Here's the order you need to do it in. Here's the priority that it needs to happen. Here's the sequence that I need to see. I've given you everything. It's pure gold. It's amazing. It's wrapped up in a beautiful little package. What do you think? And they run off and they still don't do it. One of the reasons is, and you don't have to do this every time, but sometimes if you notice a repeating pattern of like, I tell them to go left. I tell them exactly how to go left. I tell them when to go left. And they're not going left. It's very often because they did not have a shared understanding of what you meant. So let me give you a hack, the simplest and most effective way to get people to verify. And you don't have to do this every time, but when you really need that effectiveness, here's what you do. You say, okay, we've had a great conversation. I've told you all the things that I want to see. I've told you all my expectations. Here's what I need from you. After this meeting, I need you to go take 5 minutes immediately and write me an email with your understanding of our agreement and then send it to me. And I will use that to confirm our agreement. Okay. So what'll happen 85% of the time is they will send you an email and some parts of it will be wrong. And you will then correct them in the email and then you'll have the new agreement verified. Now, why do I do that? The biggest reason I do that is when you ask somebody to generate their best thinking about their understanding, it actually instantiates it more in them. When they're the ones generating the thought, they're coming up with their own, like, did I understand that right? And is that a mistake? And they're starting to ask that question. And then when you correct it, it'll actually be integrated in them far better. Okay, so I'm going to pause there for just a minute. Open it up to any questions or comments before we go on to the next thing. So this is all the manager's responsibility is a huge aspect of whether or not you're going to get people performing the way you need them to. Comments, questions, pushback, feedback, anything.
No pushback, but I can see where having them, it's kind of like you never learn something better than when you're trying to teach it. So for them to repeat it all back to you, they have to do a serious consideration of what you guys discussed. And you're inevitably going to find some gaps in their understanding.
Exactly. And, you know, that's fairly labor intensive. So I recommend you use it for kind of higher stakes issues, or in the case of repeated persistent patterns of like not getting what you need, if there's a particular team member. So it's a little labor intensive, but it's definitely powerful. And I've seen it clean up a lot of issues.
I can see some issues with, not, I don't want to say pushback from people that you're managing so much as maybe a level of confusion, just when you change to this, if you've been managing them very differently for several years,
yes,
and all of a sudden you come back and it's going to change things a little bit. And that's going to be an interesting change, because I'm going to have to do some of this with some people that I have not been on top of this with.
Yep, exactly. And it does take you a little more time to sit down and answer the questions that I just laid out for you. And as you answer them, you're going to go, oh yeah, I do have an opinion on that, and I haven't shared that opinion, and that is material. Mm-hmm. Or you might be like, I don't have an opinion on that. Well, you know what? I probably need to tell them I don't have an opinion on that and make that explicit. Like, what order you get this done in, I don't care. How much weight you give to something, I don't care. You figure it out on your own. Let them know that. But if you do have an opinion, make sure it's clear. Awesome. Okay. Christine, I'm getting your comments there. Glad to hear your interactions. Okay. Anybody else? Otherwise, we will keep moving. All righty. Here we go. There's another piece to this. And I think in the interest of time, I'm going to, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, because there's another training that I do that is on the Staging the Ascent. This is at the heart of change management. So this is video, I think it's video 13. Video 13 of module 1 is where I describe the Staging the Ascent process. And what we're talking about here is when you're doing fairly large scale change management, you're implementing a new technology system and people don't seem to be buying in, or you know you need to restructure and hire somebody and people aren't buying into that restructuring, and you need to have a process by which you lead change, that is very often what gets in the way of people saying yes to what it is you want them to do. And so I have a separate training that I do on one of these calls. So I'm not going to go through that now, but this is another question you can ask. If you're looking at it, you're like, gosh, it's kind of large scale. Did I do a good job of staging the ascent? If your answer to that is, I don't even know what that is, make sure you go watch the video on staging the ascent in module 1, and you can answer that question there. It's one of the most powerful tools I've ever used. I've used this tool. I've seen people use this tool to align a team of close to 40,000 people with about 9 different levels. And they said it was the most effortless change they had done. And the guy got promoted as a direct result of using this one tool in a very big, complex system. You can also use it in smaller systems. yeah, something for you to be aware of. And Christine, I'll look forward to answering your question as we kind of get to the end of this. And remind me if I don't get to it. Next one, also a change management process that I want people to be aware of. Should I use an 80-20 process? This is also in a video, I don't know which video it is, but it's module 5. It's how to do strategy. So here's what the 80-20 process looks like. Number one, you're going to get frontline data. Now, what I mean by 80-20 is I'm saying you as a leader or manager are going to bake an idea to roughly 80% complete, and then you're going to ask your team to complete the remaining 20%. And you're going to tell them this is how it's going to go. So you're going to say, my job is to build a certain thing, to try something, to implement something. And then I'm going to bring it to you at about 80% bake. And I want you to complete that remaining 20%. And what you're doing here is you're giving them ownership. You're actually bringing them into the process of the change. Now, not all change can be done this way, right? So this isn't apply across the board. Here's the steps to doing the 80-20 process. One is get frontline data. You're asking them, hey, give me information. What are the challenges, tensions, pains that I'm going to use? Two, analyze and strategize. That's you doing that. Three, present it back to them. Here's my big idea. This is what I think we need to do in order to fix, change, pivot, whatever. This is what I think is right. Let them design the last 20%. You tell them that. And then finalize the agreements. And again, I'm going very fast through this because I don't want you to get bogged down. Not everybody needs to do this, But if anything I'm saying here sounds interesting, make sure you go look at module 5. You can go deeper there. And if you have any questions at the end of this little training, we can talk through this. But I just want to make sure I get through the highlights. Okay. Now, let's say you've done it all perfectly. You've made people awake and aware. You've done all the steps right. You've verified their understanding. You did it right. And they're still not performing. Well, the first thing to know is, unless you're dealing with somebody who is deeply, deeply disillusioned and angry and hurt, they want to be successful. They want to perform well. And that means you are aligned. You both want them to perform well. So again, unless they're severely disenfranchised, angry, and they're basically colluding against you, which does happen, let's assume that they want to perform. Then you have four reasons they're not performing, and only four reasons. Number one is just a skill. So do they have the hard skills necessary? Are they technically competent? Do they have critical thinking skills, business planning skills, people and project management skills, communication skills, time management? A lot of the things I'm teaching in here are hard, concrete skills that you can execute and implement, right? Do they have a knowledge base? Do they have a basic understanding? Anytime you see somebody who lacks skills, that requires a certain kind of intervention. We'll get to those in a minute. Next is it motivation? Do they even want to do well? This is where we get to like disenfranchised, angry, hurt, under-resourced, morale problems. How excited are they to do the work? What kind of emotional intelligence are they bringing to the equation? They have a sense of connection with their own purpose. Like, how is the day-to-day tasks they're doing connect to the thing they care about most in the world? And if it doesn't, if there's a huge gap between like, I'm mopping the floor and I don't care about this and I don't know why I'm doing it because I want to be a writer, and they're going to hate it. They're going to do a bad job. Life circumstances, birth, death, divorce, health, any number of things that could severely impede and impact somebody's ability to get the work done. So compassion around those things, some curiosity. So that's that. Next one is experience. Have they lived through enough cycles? Like, they know what they don't know. This is one of the things. I was talking to a guy who was in his 60s, and he had spent 40 years as a construction VP and built $4 billion worth of buildings. And he was working with a developer who had 3 years of experience. And what he said to me is like, Shane, the thing you're going to get with me is that after 40 years of doing what I've done, I know a whole lot about what I don't know. And what you're going to get from that guy is he has no idea what he doesn't know. So that's a really good indicator of how experienced are they? Do they know what they don't know? Do they know how to ask the right questions? Have they lived through enough cycles of something to anticipate unintended consequences? Do they have broad exposure to a variety of tools and methods and even benchmarking? You know, can they benchmark talent and people? Have they seen that? Do you think they're good at that? Sometimes somebody can be too experienced. Are they so experienced that they think they have all the answers and they're an expert and they're no longer curious and they no longer want to hear about how the world's changed? That can also be a major impediment. So those are the kinds of things that we're talking about with experience. And then there's only one other reason people don't perform. Does anybody know what that reason is? What have I missed here? Is there anybody who can tell me what I missed here?
The only thing I can think of is an unrealistic expectation to begin with.
That's a possibility. Yeah. So you got to make sure that that's where that kind of section one, make sure that everything's clear and is realistic. So that's a fair point. Time can be. Yes. So resources. That's exactly right. That's the last thing that can get in the way of somebody's performance. So maybe there's a structural problem in the organization. Reporting lines aren't clear. Politicking is happening and they're prevented from doing their work because of something like that. Staffing. Do they have the right kind of staff bandwidth? Adequately funded is their project. Gridlock or conflict in relationships. These are all different things that could be just structural out there that will prevent people from getting the work done. So skill, motivation, experience, and resourcing. Those are the four main reasons that people might not be performing. So here's what I encourage you to do. When you're encountering somebody and you're looking at them, I want you to take a crack at assessing which one you think it might be. So you're looking at them, you're going, is it a skill thing? No, they're highly trained. Is it motivation? I don't think so. They seem super engaged. They seem happy to be here. I don't know why that. Is it experience? Oh, yeah. They are greener than I realize. Sometimes they say things in a meeting. I'm like, what? What are you saying? You really don't know what you don't know, do you? So now you're like, oh, maybe it's experience. Resource. No, they got plenty of money. They're not complaining about that. Or you might be like, yeah, actually, they don't have the right bandwidth. They're completely stressed beyond belief. And so now you've narrowed it down to like experience and resourcing. After you have your hypothesis about what it is, then you would initiate a conversation with them in which you say, hey, first of all, I want to make sure, do you feel like I've been really clear? Second, my assessment is of these four things, skill, motivation, experience, and structure, my sense is that we're really struggling here in experience and resource. Is that your sense too? Like, I feel like that's an area we haven't really explored. What's your belief? And get them to join in the conversation. Get them to go, well, yeah, when you say experience, I guess I don't have that experience. And I didn't realize that I didn't know that. And so you're trying to help them join in the conversation. Okay, so that's how you would have that conversation. So what are the interventions? When somebody lacks skill, you tell me, what are some interventions? How would you handle somebody who lacks skills?
Training.
Yeah, great. Could identify a mentor. Maybe you're the mentor, maybe somebody else outside the organization. Training. You could also outcomes and deadlines. So you might decide like, no, I think this person has a lot of potential, but I've clearly, back to your point earlier, Steve, my expectations were unrealistic for this person. I need to calibrate them. I need to move the goalposts. Maybe they need to shadow you more often. Maybe that's part of it, right? Good. Engagement. What are some solutions for engagement? How would you get somebody more engaged if you sense something wasn't quite right? What would you be thinking about? How would you have that conversation?
You got to know what motivates them, what it is that's going to drive them to want to achieve it.
Great. Great question. Yeah, you want to get curious about what motivates them. What else? What else? If you're sensing engagement is a problem, well, how would you handle that?
Make sure they understand what the mission is.
Yeah. And even maybe make sure that what they're doing day to day is linked to the mission, that they see the link. You know, they might feel really detached from the mission. Sometimes when you're in day to day stuff, it feels like this is pointless and repetitive, and I'm the myth of Sisyphus pushing a boulder up a hill, you know? Good. So for connection to purpose, I would ask the question, what do you want or what do you need? You know, hey, I'm sensing kind of what you're doing feels a little at odds with, or maybe detached from the thing you're most passionate about. What lights you up? What's exciting you? What is there anything you need? You know, they may not have a good answer. They might have a really great answer that can help you respond to that. Make sure you're explicitly linking their performance to either learning or career goals. So, you know, it could be that you're looking at them and you're going, hey, I know you're mopping the floor and that feels tedious and hard and difficult, but here's what I want you to know. I want you to know that when you get really good at doing that, it leads to this next. And what I want you to learn how to do is use this tool, because when you learn that tool, it puts you on the path to do more of this. You need to make sure you've understood what their career goals are. For personal matters, you can ask, what support do you need? You know, it's a delicate one, right? When it's personal, you got to be careful how much they want you in invading their privacy. But you could just simply say, hey, you've alluded to a particular thing going on. I would love to know, what do you need to support you? And find out what they say. So those are a couple of key things around engagement. By the way, all of this and more is in a detailed workbook that you can download from Module 3, and you can use that anytime you're going to have a performance conversation. I have managers who literally just go through like a checklist and go, okay, where am I? What do I need to think about? And it just helps them plan that hard conversation. Okay. When their heart isn't in it, encourage other lines of work. It's totally okay to be like, hey, we've been at this for a while. This is clearly not aligned for you. How can I help you figure out where to go next? And you can involve them in that process. This is a big one. Super interesting. Sometimes thank you I see what you've done, or I'm sorry can work wonders. It literally is that if they're feeling disenfranchised, hurt, slighted, disrespected, betrayed, anything that might be going on, you as a manager just go on, hey, first of all, I want to thank you and acknowledge you, or I see what you've been doing and I know it's so hard. And some people, that's a breath of fresh air. Kind of goes back to that five leadership languages, right? So you might look at that and go, have I really been speaking their leadership language that can impact engagement? Morale is impacted by, are you speaking their leadership language? And then another big one is just when you screw up, say you're sorry, apologize. Sometimes that's all that's holding someone back from performing at their absolute best. And the last one is career pathing. You know, have you given them hope for the future? Had a recent guy who was really upset at the job that he was in. All it took was one conversation. He was looking at leaving the company. The manager has sat down and said, here's where I see you are in 2 years. Here's what I need you to perform at in order to get there in 2 years. Suddenly the guy's the most motivated guy in the whole company because he sees where he can go and he understands what is required of him in order to get there. All right. Experience. What do you do with somebody who's inexperienced? How do you intervene when you're working with somebody like they just don't have the cycles?
That one, definitely, I would think that the coaching and mentoring would be very useful there.
For sure. Yep. Coaching and mentoring. Absolutely. What else?
Yeah, I was gonna say some of the topics and the skill set is would carry over here. So it's the coaching, the training, the mentoring. Experience, you either live it or you see it. So if they're not, if they haven't lived it yet, they've got to be able to see what somebody else is doing in that experience.
Yep, exactly.
Good. That whole shadowing idea of teaming them up with somebody more experienced to help them gain and see that, which kind of goes along with coaching and mentoring, but
for sure. Yeah. It's a version of coaching and mentoring for sure. Good. Excellent. Yeah. So another one is candidly, you might need to scale responsibility to match experience. Like you may need to look at that and be like, okay, I've given them way too big of a thing to bite off. That's putting our organization at risk. You might need to install more checkpoints along the way. So if you give them a project, you know, go develop a strategy and they're like, I'm lost. You need to go, okay, well, here are the five steps. We're going to meet after each step. And I'm going to show you after this one, we're going to meet. We're going to check in. I'm going to help you shape it. Then we're going to meet again after this step. It takes more time, I realize, but this is the only way that you can protect the organization and the team against inexperienced and bad decisions. So you'd need to do that on things that are clearly much more important. Like you don't need to do this on everything. But it's often something people lose sight of, is like scaling responsibility and creating more stage gate processes along the way. Follow up more frequently. And if too much experience, make sure you invite curiosity. You know, that's a really interesting conversation to have when you got somebody who's really experienced to say, hey, you're super experienced. You've been around. This isn't your first rodeo. It's why we hired you. It's why we love you. It's why we need you and want you. One thing I would love to see more of is just a little more curiosity about how things in the world are changing. It's going to help you a lot. And what I'd love to see is for all of us to cultivate a beginner's mind. You know, there's nothing more dangerous than an expert mind that believes that they've seen this and done this 100 times before. It's impossible to step in the same river twice. It's an illusion because the river moved, and that's happening in life too at all times. So what does it mean for us to penetrate and investigate our own narratives, beliefs, and assumptions of expertise? And what would it look like for us to come to each new situation and say, what if I'm a beginner here? How might that change the way I think about and interact with the decisions I'm making? What questions might I ask that I wouldn't have otherwise if I just assume I'm right all the time? So that what I just gave you there, those little phrases and questions, those are things you should memorize if you're dealing with somebody who's really experienced and locked in a method. Last, resourcing, you know, for workload or time, help them prioritize work. That number three, I think, in the list of things, like make them aware of like, here's where I want you to spend a lot of energy. Here's where you don't need to spend energy. That should only take you 5 minutes. If you're spending more than 5 minutes, you've already spent too much time. That can be really helpful, getting a lot more defined in your expectations. For structure, you consider like a RACI exercise or review staffing needs. RACI, the RACI process is called, it's, if you've never heard of it before, it's Responsibility Approved Consult Inform. It's a whole process on the chart that I go in great detail in module 4. Just look for the RACI process and you'll see that it's really powerful in creating clarity on structures. So sometimes structures can be unclear, swim lanes are a little bit off, nobody knows who's on first. This is one of the best ways that I've found to make sure you know who's on first, who's accountable for what, and it can often clear up lots of issues in organizations. For relational gridlock, you know, pay attention to that. You might need a coach, you might need to supervise, you might need to hire a coach, or you might need to get HR involved, but the idea is that you might need to have conversations to form, you know, career relationships. For workload or time, just consider role definition or extra staff. You know, there's only so many options you can do on that one. You might need to consider more budget, or you might need to move goalposts, right? Like one of the most helpful, simplest ways that I've ever thought about in any kind of organization I'm in is fast, cheap, or good. Pick two. That's it. You only get two. Fast, cheap, or good. And that goes for anything in any business. And when you're looking at it, you want to ask the question, which of those three matters most right now? Which of those two, I should say, are the most important? And then you got to calibrate accordingly. And sometimes that's the thing that will unlock performance in people, is just knowing that fundamental limitation. Fast, cheap, or good, pick two. Okay. Comments or questions on any of this? All righty. I'm not going to go in greater detail here because I want to make sure we open it for time for coaching. What time is it? Just want to make sure we have enough here. Yeah, we're good. This is where I introduce a way of talking to people when you have power over people. This is how you make that awareness between my whisper is a shout actually show up and be felt in a way that's going to be heard the way you intend. And so one of the ways is to understand anytime you're going to give feedback to somebody that they're not performing at the way, at the level you want, is to understand that very often an overplayed strength can become a weakness. And it's just a really interesting way to have hard conversations around people's failings, is to ask the question, this thing that I see that's irritating me or that isn't working the way I want, is there any way in which that might be a strength of theirs that is just being overplayed? And why would I say that? Well, the reason is because change happens when your defensiveness comes down. When defensiveness is high, change is made very difficult. And a way that you reduce resistance and defendedness is by acknowledging strength and power. People are more likely to hear, I'm strong and powerful, and I can see how that strength needs to be managed, versus you're doing a bad job and you're weak. That creates defensiveness. So it's just a technique by which to do that. So an example might be, talks too much in meetings. That's the area of development. How might you frame that as an overplayed strength? Crickets.
And Donnie, I can think of this, you know, you've got great ideas to share, and while you're sharing all those ideas, somebody else may not be able to share some ideas that they've had.
Great. Yeah, that's a good one. What's another? What else might be their strength that makes them talk so much in meetings?
They process fast. They're a fast processing, you know, person, and they, that's a strength.
I love it. Yep. That could be exactly right. Yep. Good. Okay. So, you know, I said smart, fast thinking, abundance of ideas. Hey, in the room, anytime we're in a meeting, you're clearly one of the fastest thinkers and you've got this incredible cadre of amazing ideas. Something I notice is it has a way of removing all gaps in the room. And that means that we lose group intelligence and we end up with individual intelligence, which yours is considerable. But I believe that as a group, we're even smarter. And so I'd love for you to create deliberate space. So here's a step. Why don't you think about writing all your ideas down in a meeting? And I'm going to suggest that you wait and deliberately create gaps. It's going to feel painful at first. But I think if you can wait, you're going to see a lot of interesting ideas and then bring to bear afterwards. Maybe you end up agreeing with somebody and they feel greater strength and contribution. This is another way. You're a smart, quick thinker with a lot of great ideas, but sometimes others may be discouraged from contributing, right? So there's different ways to talk about it. All I'm trying to do is give you like a couple of examples so that when you're trying to manage people and you're just not seeing what you need, sometimes an overplayed strength. Oh, this is a repeat slide. You're a quick thinker, a lot of great ideas. Others are more deliberate in the way they process, et cetera. Doesn't commit to a perspective, quiet and reserved. What's the strength that's being overplayed there?
Something I'm guilty of, overthinking.
But that's a weakness. So what's the strength? What is your strength, Steve?
Remains open.
Yeah, remains open-minded and willing to think about and consider a wide variety of options and ideas.
Great. Steve, what's your strength that causes you to do that? Is it just because you're open or is there some other reason you're really good at this?
I think to use your example last time, I've got that owl type mentality where I do see kind of 360. So
yes,
I'll see the value in somebody's opinion and the value in somebody else's, and that can actually bog you down.
Yep. In addition to being open, you're quite deliberative, right? You're really processing through and deciding where things go and how. Yeah, great. Considerate of others' opinions. That's the strength I chose here. It's not the only one, right? I'm just choosing examples. One of your greatest strengths is kindness, often lacking in the corporate world. Sometimes we can't hear your direct and clear point of view. We need more of that. All right, so remember, it may seem weird in this training what I'm doing, but I'm giving you very specific language patterns. The only tool you have as a leader is your language. That is what makes or breaks credibility, inspires, demotivates, does all kinds of things. And so what I'm working with are language patterns that I know have the ability to unlock, lead, and move people. So it may seem super tactical, but all these resources are designed to help with that. We can go on and on. I'm just going to hammer through. You can go deeper. Side note, don't ever use email or text to evaluate someone. Just don't do it. You can do it as a follow-up, but initial conversation need to be, you value people enough to devote time to them. We already did this last week, but focus your feedback on what they can control, right? So you're focused on actions, words, and their effect. You're not assigning motives, feelings, character traits, intentions. They're not helpful, even if you're right. So you go back to training from last week to talk about what are those things that you focus your feedback around. Okay, good enough. I think we've covered that training. If you want to go deeper, there's module 3, tons of other resources in there that I didn't touch on that are designed to help with this very issue of getting the most from your team. Okay, with that, questions, anything I didn't address, things that came up, you can either talk about questions from this training or you can look at anything else that's going on in your world. Christine, I'm going to go back and just look at your questions. Did I address any? I haven't read them all.
Hey, Shane. Thank you. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
No, this is like, I just had a big like aha moment as you were like teaching all this. And I feel like I've been in avoidance phase the last 2 years because I don't have true employees, and I don't have to be on top of things, and I just roll with it. We figure it out as we go. But it's time to really up-level that. And, you know, it doesn't matter if they're contractors or employees, I have to treat them like they are my top-notch employees. You know what I mean? So thank you for, like, having this awareness in me that I didn't even realize. And that's why I haven't been doing this. And that's why I've been avoiding these conversations. And that's why my team fell apart last year, which was a blessing in a way. But I had a question in the chat earlier on. So I've been building my first company, and then this month I launched my second company, and there's a lot of the overlap. Again, the first company is all in the health and wellness space, teaching other clinicians to start their business, entrepreneurship, clinical certifications, and all that. But now I'm doing more of the clinical side in the wellness center. So there's a lot of overlap. I'm in the same holistic wellness space, still, you know, preaching this. However, there are different target audiences, right? And I have not hired new team for my new company for the wellness center. So then my executive assistant and my OBM, my marketing team, like everyone is kind of like taking roles here too as we're building this out. But as I'm growing and scaling, like, would you recommend to hire separately, even though there's such a huge overlap? Like, what are your takes and like this, you know, baby phases as a startup, I guess. How long can I go with the, you know, having one person do two roles, let's say my OBM in here and there, or should I just have completely different team for both companies?
I think the first question you need to ask in both of your businesses, even though they seem very related, you need to ask, what business are you truly in? So in the entrepreneurial space where you're training people how to do this, you're not actually in the health and wealth business. You're in the money-making business. You are in the business of helping other people make money. That's what you're doing. One of the things, it may be another way to phrase it, but that's the first thing that comes to my mind, right? So there's deeper ways to talk about this. In the health and wellness business, you may not be in the business of making people money. You might be in the business of improving people's health. Right? So you have effectively in the world of business, you have money, health, relationships. We're going to add value in one of those three categories. So now you have a business that is fundamentally adding value in two completely different categories. It doesn't matter that it's the same adjacent space. They're fundamentally different kinds of businesses. They require different go-to-markets, different market messaging, different avatars, different everything. So I think that's the first thing is for you to get really clear on like, how different are these businesses really? Because they might be a lot more different than I appreciate. And if they're that different, do I have talent that knows how to bridge the gap between how different those businesses really are? Sometimes you will have talent that can do both and do them well and understand the difference and knows how to partition and not just carry over all the assumptions from one to the other. That may exist. Sometimes you won't have that. And the skills required to be successful in this business are diametrically opposed to the skills required in this business. So I would say that's the main question I would like you to be exploring is how similar are they? How different are they? Now, I'm asking the question. I'm not actually telling you which it is because I don't actually know. When you raised it, that's the first thing that came to my mind was make sure you're really clear on the answering the question, what business am I ultimately in? So I'll pause there for a minute.
Yes, you're like hands down. Yes, the first business is all in education, certification, entrepreneurship, you know, helping clinicians to go from corporate to online practitioners, private practice, all this like very different avatar, very different branding. Second is, yeah, it's in the wellness space. I'm about to launch, you know, holistic weight loss program, like, you know, getting certified in Ayurvedic nutrition and chakra healing and all this like woo-woo stuff that, you know what I mean? I may teach in my other business how to do it because I want my clinicians to have the same tools, but now I'm the practitioner in a wellness center running the actual program. So yes, definitely different. Everything is different. Yes, there's an overlap, same theme in health and wellness space, but they're very, very, very different.
They are. And I think the more you create separate fundamental business plans, fundamental, all of the underlying assets, you'll have to think of them quite separately. And there are some roles that will transfer and some roles that won't. So sometimes a salesperson can sell to two totally different markets and they do really well. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes a marketing person can have lots of expertise in one area of marketing and have no idea how to market to another area. I've seen it all the time. So I think you need to be asking that question, like, can you transition the skills over? And does it really serve the business to do that?
No, it's true. Great. So yeah, thank you. Yeah, there's some appreciate work to do, but my gut feeling is to build them separate because it's less confusion too. And especially they're all contractors. It's like they're submitting their hours. They're like, okay, which business takes priority? Like, so it just messy. So
I think you're smart to try to keep it separate. And then as it scales, you might find ways that you can create and install higher level thinkers that can transcend both businesses. But I think you're smart to, it's going to give you more latitude. Whenever you're starting a business, obviously what we're always doing is pivoting constantly. We're trying to figure out what our message is. We're trying to figure out what our offer is. We're trying to figure out product market fit. There's a whole world in those early days that's super messy and chaotic, and you need maximum freedom and flexibility. And so sometimes when you have the primary center of gravity over here that's a little ahead, it tends to be the tail that wags the dog in the other business. So you just want to be mindful of that. So
yeah,
good.
And I also want to make decisions based on the employee's perspective too. You know, would you want to work in two different companies, right? So I always have to have the expectations from the beginning. How does it sound? So yeah, thank you. This has been amazing. So sorry, I have my camera off while we're driving.
Not at all. No. Glad you asked the question.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, appreciate it. Okay, who else has questions or anybody want to comment on Christine's question? That's fine too, but open floor. We can talk about the training or we can talk about anything going on in your world.
Well, I don't have any questions about this specific training because I feel like it's very beneficial. I just onboarded four people. So having this in my wheelhouse and my knowledge now as we get to 30, 60, and 90 day evaluations is going to be really helpful. I maybe have a separate question. I serve on a couple of boards, and one in particular, there's only five of us, and the chair is not a very strong leader. And there's some conflict, and specifically there's some conflict between myself and another one of the doctors that I think is everything is reasonable, but this doctor just somehow, I think he doesn't know how to exist on a board, right? So there's only two of us who have board experience. And I guess I don't even know what my question is, almost like where to even start to bridge that gap where I feel like we have a lot of nitty gritty work that we have to do to prepare for accreditation. And this doctor doesn't want to do it. And he doesn't want to meet as a group, as a board. He always wants to bring in other doctors from the state and focus on fundraising and enrollment and marketing and not the actual nitty gritty of what we have to do to move the project forward.
Okay. I want to ask a few clarifying questions. Before I ask those, I want to flag for you something. You're onboarding four new people. There is a bonus training. The first bonus training in the module in the training plan is called the First 90 Day Success Program or plan or whatever. it is written for who are starting new roles. But it's something I want you to read and look at so that you can guide them really effectively. And you can also just print out the plan and give it to them and say, okay. I want, if you like it, I mean, you should review it and see if you like it. Mm-hmm. And then you should give that to them and say, I want you to be really successful. The first 90 days is critical. Here's the recommendation I have. Here's what I want you to do. And then let them run that. It'll be helpful. So it's beyond just like, where's the bathroom and how do I get paid and all the things that you know, are typically part of onboarding. It's more that cultural, relational understanding how to prioritize things. Some of it's going to be overkill for the scale that you're at. So mm-hmm. make sure you tailor it. You'd look okay. at it and be like, actually do that much. And that's kind of overkill for your role. You don't need to do that. So that's written for more like higher level VPs coming into big organizations. But mm-hmm. if you scale it appropriately, it's still yeah. the same principles underlying.
Right.
Like that for you. The board issue, you're basically saying this chairperson is doing things that I think are not the priorities that this board needs to have.
It's not the chair. The chair tells me he understands and will rein it in, but he doesn't. He's a pretty passive leader. It's another board member.
Yeah. So, you know, this is where I'll tell you another bonus to review, which I will do. I think I do this. I can't remember if I do, but for sure. Bonus 5, how to manage up and across. So this is what I just did, was a training on what happens when you have power over people. The same question can be asked. What happens when you have power under, when you don't mm-hmm. have power and you need to influence somebody? And whether that's somebody across or somebody above you, the communication patterns have to be completely different. And ends with the very first step in that training is you have to divest yourself of outcomes mm-hmm. because you do not have the power to bring them about. And the more you divest yourself emotionally of the outcomes, it doesn't mean you don't care. It doesn't mean you don't advocate. It doesn't mean you don't have an opinion. It means that you are not personally affected one way or another, whether the thing goes the way you want it to. Mm-hmm. When you come from that place, you will be heard energetically more credibly. Mm-hmm. And that is a big part of what people don't realize they're dealing with when they're trying to influence up and across, is credibility, is what they're really trying to develop, is like to be heard and validated as a credible voice to be understood. Here's why. When you're in a position of power, you have a dashboard with all kinds of warning lights going on all the time. You are one of those warning lights. And so he's got 10 others he's listening to. And he's like, yeah, okay, yeah, sure. I guess we're low on fuel. Yeah, I guess we have low oil. Yeah, I guess we have tire pressure. So yeah, we got 30 things that are wrong. My job as a leader is to pick the one that I think is most urgent right now. And that may mean I silence or ignore you. When you come from that awareness, a really weird thing happens. And I show you exactly how to do this in that training. Your light gets brighter. When there's a certain set of techniques and language patterns that I show you, but I probably won't have time to go into here, but I want you to review that also. And then come back next week and see if you want to double click and go a little deeper. Once we have that kind of shared language, I can make that more efficient right. for you. We can tailor it for like exactly how you would do it in your context. Perfect. So I don't mean to be brushing that off. I just want to make sure it would be yeah. like a fairly involved conversation. Yeah. That is going to help you get heard. You still may not get the outcome you want, but you're at least going to get heard more credibly. Your voice is going to get a lot louder without you having to speak louder.
Mm-hmm. Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Other questions, comments about anything?
I'll make a comment that something I've been taking out of just this first couple of sessions I've been sitting in on is, and you said it earlier today, that as a leader, our language really is our power. Our language is so important. And when you give us certain things to say or certain ways to phrase things, sure, sometimes it's stuff. I mean, I know all the words, but that's not the same as putting them together in the right way to gain the effect that I need. And I've been using some of them this past week. I have a tendency myself as the boss to give my immediate reaction to things and not always give my employees the chance to even finish expressing their ideas. And I've been catching myself doing that a lot more. And luckily I have a manager working underneath me that has pointed it out to me as well. She's aware that I'm working on it, and she doesn't have any problem at all with saying, "Hey, Doug, you're doing that again. Stop it," which is helpful.
Good. That's awesome.
And I've turned it around and started using some of the lessons. I mean, last week, I'm not being clear. May I try to explain this again to you? And it's not a word for word what you said, but it's the same. It's the concept. And yep. She was like, oh my God, you're learning. Yes.
That's great.
This stuff does work. Even when people know it's coming, it does work. And yes, and it's a good thing.
Yeah. First of all, that's awesome. I'm so happy to hear that, Doug. And I'm glad you're implementing and I'm glad you're seeing results. And it will, what people don't realize is you can save your team 10 productive hours in a week if you just rephrase one comment. Mm-hmm. Just the "I completely disagree" versus "I think about that differently, tell me more." Game changer.
No, I have to work on that one more.
Super happy that you're learning. It is. It's a habit. And that's why you can download that switches guide. That's also in module 3. It's a training called Switches. And it's literally, here are the 10 most common things leaders want to say. And here's what to say instead. And I've heard them so many times. And you're going to recognize yourself in every one of them. You're like, yep, I wanted to say that. Yeah, I've said that many. Yep, I definitely say that. Memorize the alternative instead. And it is. It's literally a cheat sheet that's going to change the game for you. So I'm excited to see you seeing the value and getting the results. It's awesome.
One of my businesses is in pest control, and the whole concept of say this, don't say this is a big thing.
Exactly. What people don't realize about management is there's a tremendous amount in common between management, marketing, and sales. The reason people don't do well in management is they don't understand that you have a responsibility still. See, in sales and marketing, they realize their power under, right? They have power. I don't. I need to be really, really smart about how I have this conversation. In management, they go, well, I pay you. You have to do what I say, so I don't have to think about it. It's a huge mistake. Mm-hmm. And people don't realize that people can collude against you without you knowing it and without them even doing it consciously because there's a power imbalance. So they will automatically, if they're feeling slighted, hurt, betrayed in any way, they will collude against you and make things worse and harder. And so that's why I'm always telling people, like, sales, marketing, and leadership, very, very similar basket of ideas. And so all the trainings I'm giving you are very similar to sales trainings. The other thing I want to say is, you just said it really well. You're like, even though they knew what's coming, even though they know that trick, this is the most beautiful thing about management, unlike sales, is that you can actually reveal your entire deck of cards, your hand, and people will be even more eager to help you. They'll lean in even more if you say, hey guys, I'm taking a leadership training because I notice that I'm really bad at how I communicate. And I shoot from the hip and I say things and I want you to not take it personally. And I want you to raise your hand and laugh with me when I try the other technique. And I'm going to try the technique right now. I'm not being clear. Let me try again. How did I do? It's a really funny thing that starts to happen. People join you with like a tongue in cheek and it de-escalates the feeling of our boss is a dictator. They start to feel the warmth, the softness that you have. And so it's totally okay to let people in on the joke that, like, hey, I'm learning how to do this stuff and I learned a technique and I want to learn how to do it better. And you're a part of that.
And Doug, the fact that you have somebody that'll call you out when you're stepping on somebody's toes, I have to do that for my boss all the time. You know, I haven't seen his Instagram, but I guarantee you he's that 8 that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. He's the bull in the china shop. And I had to do it today. And I had, fortunately, I had that relationship with him where I can tell him, like, doing it again. And he laughs and he changes what he's saying. And most of the time, but I try to keep him out of trouble.
Yeah,
I love it.
It helps to implement things sometimes when you've got someone like that.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. So good that you have that, Doug. Keep that back channel alive. Healthy. It's really good. Good. Okay. Other comments, questions, anything going on?
Christine is asking about the industries that we're in.
Oh yeah, sure. I didn't see that.
Christine, yeah. I do mortgage we're currently with a community bank. We're in the midst of 3 different buyers right now. So Shane, you've heard some of that. So I think by the end of this month, we will be set free. We'll see how that goes.
Wow. Yeah, that was touching there for a while. Your CEO's doing good work.
See.
We'll see. Yeah. Dana, you're next on the list. You're on my screen. What industry are you?
I'm in healthcare, chiropractic, and education.
Awesome.
And Chris, regulation.
I'm in the people business. I'm a lead pastor, and I'm trying to take care of people on a regular basis and lead a staff of about eight. So I have four full time and four part time people.
Nice,
Doug.
As I said, I'm in pest control. I run a seasonal pest control franchise in this area, and I also run a small IT consulting company as well.
Awesome. Awesome. The other thing that I want to do, but sometimes when I have time, unless somebody has another question, there's another little piece of training I want to do that's related to what we're talking about. Anybody else have anything pressing on them? Otherwise, I will we'll try to do this. Let's see if I can do this here. This is a delegation process. Okay. So some people will ask when I do how to have performance conversations. Another thing that people will struggle with sometimes is just delegating, like how you know, when to do what, how I'm delegating, I'm not getting what I need, or I'm not delegating enough, or maybe you're just, you know, things are, that calibration can often be difficult depending on your personality, depending on what kind of staff you have, depending on what things you're working through. So one little super simple process that I like to introduce people to, may not be super necessary for you right now, but I find it to be a really helpful mapping exercise to figure out what to delegate. So the first delegation principle is to understand that a 90% is still an A. And as a leader, you may be able to do certain tasks at 100%, but getting them done at 90% is still an A. And in some cases, getting something done at 85% is still a valid effort because of the impact is so minimal, right? But it still needs to get done. And so knowing and understanding that can really help you calibrate how to do certain kinds of delegation. But there's also another dimension. So I would say, this is terrible handwriting, but I'm going to just show you here, right? So one of these little quadrants, which is on the bottom, is how important a task is. The other is how difficult a task is, right? So the importance domain is whether it needs to be done at 100% or whether it needs to be, whether it can be done at a B level, right? So that's that first dimension. But then there's this other thing, which is something might be really important, but it's super easy to do. Or something might be really important and really hard to do. Or it might be not very important, but really hard to do, right? And so what I do is I say to leaders, take a moment and list out the major tasks and activities you do in a day or in a week, and just identify what are those things that I seem to be involved in, week out, day in, day out. Make a long list, 10 items, right? After you got those 10 items, plot them on this quadrant. This thing that I do, super important, and it's very hard to get done right. That goes in quadrant one. Quadrant two, it's super hard. It's not as important. It's not very important, but it's really hard, right? And then the last quadrant, you map them all out. After you have it mapped, my recommendation as a leader is if you've got a team, anything that isn't in quadrant one should be delegated. And so start asking yourself the question, if it's not in quadrant one and I still want to do it, why is that? It could be that you're not trusting your team enough. Could be that you've got too much anxiety about how an outcome might go. It could be that you've mapped it improperly. And if you're honest with yourself, you're like, actually, that is in quadrant one, and that's why I'm not going to give it up. But this is often just a really simple exercise. This is in module five, but it's not framed from a delegation perspective. So what I'm giving you here, you do not get in the training. You get this module, this kind of technique, but it's usually in action planning, We do it to plan action in companies all the time. How hard something is, how important something is. So,
what did you say what did you say the reasons were that if there was a task that was not in quadrant one, but you still wanted to do it, what were the reasons that that might be the case?
It could be that you really don't trust your team to be able to get it done at the level that it needs to. So you want to ask, like, look, if it's not on this side of the importance, if it's kind of like over here on importance, that really should be an 85 to 90% task. If it's not that important, you shouldn't have to do it at 100%. You're wasting resources, right? Mm-hmm. So it could be that you're just like, oh, I just don't even trust my team to get it done at 85%, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're just not good enough. They haven't been onboarded. There may be real reasons, right? So then you got to figure out, how do I get them up to that 85 or 90%? Okay. Another reason might be you just can't accept something being done at 90%. Some personalities are just like, I have to have it done at 100%. Everything has to be done at 100%. Mm-hmm. I would challenge you on that if that was your personality. And then the last reason is it could be that you've put it in the wrong quadrant and it might actually need to go on quadrant one. So that would be, you know, some reasons why you might have that. And in module five, this is called the easy impact matrix. So if you want to see it again, I changed the word here for management, which is hard and important. So it's just a slightly different 2x2. Consultants love 2x2 matrixes. So when I go into organizations full of all kinds of 2x2s, it's very annoying, but quite useful.
Okay. This is in module five.
Yes, but in module five, it's framed as how to plan a team's priorities. So it's like, I need us to, as a team, to get things done. What are all the things I need to get done? And you have the easy impact matrix. So it's how easy is something to do? How big is the impact that goes in quadrant one, right? So that it's a slightly different frame that I'm using here.
Yeah, because this is something I do struggle with, because I oversee onboarding, training and development, marketing and IT, and now I'm doing stuff with sales as well. And we're in the midst of, you know, this merger to come up. And one of the things we're doing, I've got a list of 23 different vendors here that we work with. Each one of them has their own software and their own contracts. And I can't get significantly deep into the IT side of things because that's a specialized field. Yeah. I help out a lot with the marketing, with the copywriting and positioning, but I don't know how to use our CRM. I don't know how to use our website design software. And then somebody will ask you a pointed question and you feel like an idiot because you can't answer it to that depth. But should you be able to answer it to that depth? Should you say, no. That's not, say, I get to hear, if you want to go that deep, I need to bring in Christina or yep. whoever, you know, my next that's level.
Yeah.
And I struggled a lot with that. And
so
we'll continue to do so, unfortunately.
No, I love it. So first of all, this is really, really common for fives and ones on the Enneagram. Fives and ones are part of what's called the competency harmonic. And that means that they want to have mastery of a broad range of things. And unless they have that mastery, they don't feel good. They don't feel comfortable for very different reasons. Fives do it because the world is largely an unsafe place and it's how you create security. Ones do it because there's an abstract code in the sky that's right and wrong, and you got to adhere to that right and wrong. I mean, I'm being playful when I say this, right? It doesn't really matter what the reason is. What that means, though, for you is to begin to imagine that you are actually doing a great disservice to the organization and the team if you, in your role, are operating below your pay grade. And why is that? Why is that a disservice to the team? The reason is because you are paid to live at a certain vantage point on the mountain. From that vantage point, you are required, and the way you add the most value is that you can see further out. You can see more of the forest and less of the trees. And you are perched at that vantage point for that reason. And other people are perched lower on the mountain, closer to the forest, because their job is to understand the trees and to really manage what's going on in the trees. your job, you are paid to manage the forest. So anytime you're getting too close to the trees, you are no longer serving the organization. Even though it makes you feel more comfortable, you're actually working against the role and the organizational purpose. So the more you can begin to embody that, the more you start to see that quadrant one, I've got to get really disciplined about living in quadrant one and only quadrant one. And I got to get really good at mapping those others. Now, it could be that for you, a helpful exercise, I'm not saying you need to do this, but sometimes it can be quite helpful, is to get everybody in your team in a room on a given domain. Let's say you get your IT people in a room. You draw that matrix on a whiteboard and you say, here are the 10, 20 things that I think we're really engaged in seriously. Here's how I map them in terms of how important they are and how hard they are to achieve. Here's the quadrant I think I'm supposed to live in. Here's where I think you guys are supposed to live. Do you agree? Let's have a debate. Push back. See if, you know, and you might be surprised. They may be like, my man, Steve, you've got way too many things in quadrant one. We can't have you dealing that. That needs to go over here. That needs to go to, we will take that, you know, or they may be like, man, you underestimate how important this is. This is way more important than you realize. Cause if that goes down, this causes this. And you're like, oh, I didn't know that was so important. Right. So it's a way to help you have a missing conversation. Remember, a problem in a team only exists in the absence of the right conversation. Either a conversation goes missing or a conversation goes wrong. This tool is designed to help you potentially have a conversation. So I would first map it yourself. I would say, here's how I see it. And then I would invite them into a conversation. Say, hey, this is how I'm seeing it. And this, and just so you all know, my belief is that I'm supposed to own quadrant one in my role. And anything else should be really owned by you guys. And I should be available to help support you in that.
So you're saying that upper managers, we should be doing, because quadrant one is the most difficult, the most important.
Yep, that's right. And as a manager, you'll need to own certain aspects of that. Now, be really careful with this when you're dealing with a domain that you do not have expertise in, right? This is why I want to stress it's really important in your role. Now, we've talked about this, by the way, but I'll repeat it. Sometimes, even though you're authorized, you have the authority to make certain decisions, you may not be qualified to make those decisions. And so in an IT world where you have very little experience and understanding, you are not qualified to do that. And so it's an even more important conversation to have with them and say, hey, quadrant one are the most important, most difficult things to get done. Somebody has to own quadrant one. Or certain things in quadrant one. In general, under normal circumstances, that would be me. The manager's job is to own that. But while I have the authority to make decisions, I'm not always qualified to make them. And so I need us to have an honest conversation about who is most qualified in this room to make those decisions. So I would layer that in on that one. Whereas there might be another domain that you have tons of expertise. And if you just had enough time, you could answer almost every question you need to answer. That's a different conversation. That's where you're saying, hey, I'm going to own quadrant one. Nobody doubts it. I know I'm the most credible person. The rest of you need to figure this out. But in domains that you are not the most credible, there's nothing wrong with that. You're not hurting. In fact, you're gaining credibility when you acknowledge you're not qualified to make certain decisions. It's one of the most powerful things I've seen a leader do is to come in and go, hey, I've got authority, but I'm not qualified.
And I have used that exact line with my IT folks, which they got a kick out of.
I bet it helped you.
Sometimes.
I bet it helps you.
Yeah.
Doug,
you'll appreciate this. The IT folks have their own language.
For sure they do. It's a secret language.
Every time you go to a new job, you have to learn that new language.
That's right. Very true. Good stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I like that delegation process grid there quite a bit, although sometimes you might find out just how much you do, and you got to figure out How much does the skill set of your staff play into where things should fall on that grid? Or should that not? It might just tell you need to hire different people.
Combination of both. So it could be that, you know, you can't find more skillful employees right now. And so you've got to calibrate what's realistic. But a part of what I'm trying to get you to is, if you know something only has to be done at 85%, then you don't have to have top shelf skills. And you want to identify, where are those areas that I can handle being done at a below average level that I would like, but we can live with. That's one thing you got to do. The other thing that you can do is you might need to hire, right? And then the last thing you might need to do is challenge yourself a little bit on what you put in quadrant one. Sometimes we overinflate everything. So everything becomes important and everything becomes hard. And then you're stuck with, you know, I would just push a little bit on you and go, are you sure that it's mission critical? And you might be right. And in some cases, you might like, well, you know, push comes to shove, I can probably live with it as not as important. Hopefully that helps. Great stuff. Any other comments or questions about this stuff? About delegation. Okay.
If nobody has other questions on this, Shane, the one thing I would say, I still don't have access to all the bonus materials.
You don't?
I don't know if Amy is going to look into that. I've got on my dashboard.
I'm going to send a text. I had that same issue last week, and I let Amy know, and she did get it for me rather quickly.
Yeah, I've got account and sign out. That's all I've got right now.
Okay, I'm sending her a text right now.
Perfect, thank you. I definitely want to get into some of that Enneagram stuff again, too.
Also, friends and relatives, next week, make sure you delete the meeting next week. I'm not going to be available. I'm out of town. So we will not have a meeting next week. I will add a call to all of your schedules. So you'll still get the 12 full calls, but there are a couple of weeks coming up that I won't be available. So we'll bump them to next week. I get this every single time we send out an email, and you will still get a reminder saying that you are having the call. We have not figured out how to turn off a reminder in the automation. And so people will end up showing up and being like, hey, we had the call. What's going on? So my apologies. If you get reminders for next week, ignore them. They're lying, filthy lies.
I loved the email I got today at about noon that said that we're starting in an hour, but it said 1 p.m. Pacific time.
It was early.
What was that?
I got an email today around noon that said, be ready, we're starting our call in 1 hour at 1 p.m. Pacific time. But it was at noon Eastern time that I got the email.
Yeah, that gave me a little pause also.
Just came through early.
Yeah.
Okay, I need to tell Amy this as well. I think it's because of daylight savings. Something may have messed up.
I got it at 11 o'clock Eastern time, 11 a.m.
Okay.
I said, boy, I mean, I know that daylight savings time happened, but I don't think it changed that much.
Yeah, I got it at 8 a.m.
Where are you, Dana, location-wise?
I'm in Seattle.
Okay. Yeah, so you're 3 hours earlier than me, so that's, I'm on the East Coast for people that don't know where I am.
Where are you, Deb?
Me?
Yeah.
I'm outside of Philadelphia, Westchester, Pennsylvania.
All right. Grew up in Bethlehem.
Okay.
My sister's in Shanksville.
I got certified in scuba diving up in Bethlehem at the quarry up there.
Very cool.
A few years ago. Actually, it's Bath, but that's right outside of Bethlehem.
I know it.
All right. Thank you for that. I really appreciate you all giving me that input. Let's see. I think that's everything we had logistics wise. One thing that would be super helpful to me, if any of you if this occurs to you and you have a few minutes, if you could go into the Facebook group and write a little endorsement for this program, that would help me a lot in promoting it. Having it on Facebook feels more credible to people than if you were to write it to me and I were to post it somewhere, it could look like I manipulated it. So people in the online world find it like way more credible when it's like in a social media context. So if you just go into the Facebook group, and what I would love is if you could just talk about results, some kind of result you've experienced. Maybe you've saved time. Maybe you've had better working relationships. Maybe you know, something that tells people there are real results. That would be super helpful if you think about it. I keep forgetting I should have asked a while ago. There's other people that I want to ask to that, but if you're willing to do that, I'd be most grateful.
Also, if you do go in there and start chatting, we might be able to talk to each other a little bit in there outside of.
For sure. Yeah. Feel free to use it. I've done a terrible job of using that as a tool. So feel free to use it anytime you want, and I'll check it and be notified. I just have never really promoted it. It was like a side thing. I'm like, oh, I should have that. And then I never used it. But yeah, feel free to engage in there any way you want. Ask questions of me or each other. And then if you got time, just a little endorsement would be super helpful. And you can just address it to me. You can say, hey, Shane, wanted to tell you this is what I've experienced. Or you can address it to the group. Doesn't matter. Just either that or like a win as a direct result of the work we've been doing, either a training or a coaching conversation or whatever. Awesome.
You can do that.
And if you can reference the Next Level Leader program, just so that they know what you're talking about, that's what this program is. That'd be amazing. Okay. Thank you all so much for your time. Steve, if you've got 5 minutes, I'd love to just check in with you after everybody's off. Do you have a few minutes?
I do.
Or do you need to run?
Okay. Yeah, you're good.
All right.
Have a good afternoon.
Appreciate
it. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.